Hi, you're listening to Talking About Organizations, a podcast about management and organization studies, where we read and discuss foundational texts and key ideas that inform the way we think about organized work today. Talking About Organizations is a community resource supported by our listeners. To find out how and learn more about our program, visit our website at www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. We also thank the Management Learning Journal and the European Group for Organizational Studies for their wonderful support. Now on with the show. Welcome to our fifth anniversary special. This is Behind the Curtain, the first of several releases celebrating 5 years since our launch in 2015. In this release, we will provide you with an insider's look at how we do the podcast. How do we choose the classic text we will feature? How do we actually record it, produce it, post it, and much more. So sit back, relax, and prepare to look behind the curtain. This is Tom calling from Carlisle, Pennsylvania in the United States.
This is Ralph calling from the wilds of bear country in Montana in the United States.
And this is Pedro coming from Copenhagen in a beautiful yet rainy day.
And this is Dimitris coming to you from Kuldīga in Latvia. And welcome to one of the installments of our celebratory series of episodes where we mark the joyous occasion of 5 years of the Talking About Organizations podcast. So today we thought to talk a little bit about pulling back the curtain, as it were, on the podcast and cover some of the topics such as how we choose what to talk about, what are some of the mechanics of recording and how we get what we recorded to you. Talk a little bit about our initiatives for supporting fellow podcasters and fellow colleagues who wish to maybe start or experiment with a podcast. And of course, maybe reflect a little bit on why we are still doing it 5 years on. Why are we not yet sick of talking about classics and talking to each other? And why it's such a wonderful thing that we're still at it. So, today we have almost the original crew, original plus Tom, who is a significant part of the podcast ever since he joined. But I guess let's start talking about how we choose what we talk about. What's the premise of the podcast is that nobody reads the classics anymore, so we're going to read them and discuss what's going on. But what do we decide? How do we rather decide on what are the classics and, beyond the obvious Taylor, Fayol, Follett, season one of the podcast, how do we decide what to discuss?
Maybe I can have a go at that.
Well, you should. You're the one who is generally in charge of it.
I was going to say, Pedro is the best guy to lead this.
So, I mean, since the beginning, we had this idea of grounding ourselves on the classics as the North Star. And I think there are two reasons for that. One, as Dimitri just said, we were a bit disappointed on how much in the organizational fields and broader in business schools, and even social sciences, we may say, the lack of understanding or appreciation for the classics existed, at least around us, right? So that was one of the goals. And we felt that a lot of materials out there were trying to push current ideas, so recent papers, recent research, and we felt it was important to also try to see what stands behind that, right? So go back to the shoulders of the giants, so to speak. And I think classics for us was at the beginning very much the fundamental texts, right? The ones that started the conversation, the ones that are canonical, so to speak. And as we started to do and reflect on that, I think we became more and more interested in trying to expand the canon. So both trying to cover the canon, but also to bring and enrich and see other voices, right? And that's what we did in some of the episodes, and we'd like to do more, that is expand the canon. I think that besides this more scholarly justification that is showcasing the importance of the classics, especially when most of the different channels try to promote what is current, right? Which makes sense because science is always in the making. There is also something about trying to think of knowledge in a more collective way. And I think it's very telling that we are ourselves a collective, right? The podcast is very much a community effort. It's community sustained, but also community produced. And we are a bunch of people with different ideas that not always agree, but I think that we try our best to produce something together. In academia, I feel, and I think that I would be curious to know your take, a lot of the incentives and the reasoning tends to be very individualistic, right? Showcasing your own research, putting forward your own papers and pushing that. Whereas we think that it's important to think about the discipline, right? The commons, the infrastructure of knowledge, not just particular people's voices, but what is common between us? What is common in a general collective stock of knowledge? And we think that the classics selection or the appreciation for the canons allows us to do that, to go beyond so-and-so and what is current and see more what is between us, right? What has we generated as a field through all this time and try to showcase what is that? So I think there are two aspects, right? Bring the appreciation and thinking more collective. Yeah.
Right. Can I make a comment here, Pedro? And I think that you did a really good job of summarizing the larger view we take. We look at streams of ideas, not just individuals. What are some of the streams of ideas that we find interesting? And sometimes we'll look at a range of authors that we could choose from. And the way we go about choosing the authors is also fundamental to the way we do the podcast, where we nominate people, or people will nominate authors that they think are important, and explain why. And then we put that open to a vote, and we have some give and take back and forth. And sometimes as a result of the voting, we'll concentrate too much in one area, and then we'll have to say, okay, maybe this isn't the right thing. So Demetrius and Tom and others will say, I think we should really add this because we don't have enough of an emphasis here. And I think, Pedro, you really were spot on when you said we want to focus on diverse ideas and other people's understandings, because many times I find from their reading that you or Demetrius or other will emphasize a topic or an author, and I wasn't even thinking about that. And then we'll talk about, well, why that's a good area to pursue, or maybe what's been lacking. And that's one of the advantages of having been doing the podcasting for several years now, is we can say, there's some things we think we should explore more. As you said, we start out with the basics and in great detail, and why we thought they were the basics, why we thought they were fundamental. And this gives us now a chance to say, I think we'd go back to this area, or I think we should emphasize this a little bit more, because now we have the opportunity to do so. So that's one of the really fun things about doing the podcast for so long.
I'll add that we also don't hold strictly to the canon of classics. We do look at other media. And in particular, two episodes in the last couple of years have looked at movies.
Those have been a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah, they're fun. But the important thing is that they raise either contemporary, in the case of American Factory, which was a recent episode, and Modern Times, which is an older classic that really shows sort of not just looking at organization theory and management science for the purposes of understanding organizations, but also their connections with society. So we try to look at not just what do the classics tell us, but also what's been going on in society and how does that impact organizations, and try to connect the two together.
And don't forget that we celebrated episode 10 by watching 12 Angry Men.
Yes, that was
way back when.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun because it was, like Tom said, it gave us opportunity to look at a classic movie, but in terms of organizations and in terms of cooperation and teamwork and kinds of things you see in organizations. And I think Pedro would agree with me here, because he brings this up all the time. It shows how relevant the classics are for the kinds of things that you see all the time in organizations. And it was the other one that was really interesting was when we did the debate on the Federalist Papers, or one of the Federalist Papers, because we tried to do that again as a way of, I was on the team that I didn't really believe when I was arguing, but it was interesting to try to argue it in terms of the theories and research that we know, even if it wasn't something you directly believe in. So I had to say multiple times, this is not exactly the way I see it, but here are some things that are, you know, we really need to emphasize. And I think those were inspirations by Demetrius, and you know, both those were, but I think we all can get into the spirit of that.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about classics and we talk about canon, but I think it would be a bit disingenuous for us to not mention that our field, broadly speaking, management and organization studies, has a very contentious relationship with its history. and with its foundations, and that fair few scholars in the field do not believe openly that there is any merit in reading the older works for one reason or another. So when we say canon or you know, even classics, broadly speaking, that's, you know, that's not a canon in the same way as it is in literature or philosophy or, you know, any kind of more established field. And well, there's arguments to be made in both directions, but I think we generally land on the side that sees this as a significant shortcoming of our field.
So I think that, I mean, we are not classicists, right? I think that's the important distinction. And I think when I say canon, I have to qualify. For us, the canon is almost like the jazz canon, right? This set of standard melodies and ideas and resources that you can, you know, draw from and constitute the common grammar, vocabulary through which people can think and, in the case of music, of course, improvise and produce new things. And I think that's our, has always been our goal, right? To try to go back to the original, but use that and apply and connect. So that's why we do the movies and all these kind of special episodes, because they allow us to apply even more and showcase how these resources work out, right? So that's the idea. It's right. Canon is exactly in this collective body of knowledge that can be used, and we want to showcase what it really is, what difference does it make, and how can it be leveraged. I think that's where we stand.
I think another point that's worth emphasizing is that not only does Pedro love to play devil's advocate all the time and come up with contrary ideas, but he's always reminding us, stick to the text. Don't just go off on your own area and be critical theorists. Not that there's anything wrong with that per se, but focus on the text. What? I'm trying to behave myself. We might have critical theorist listeners. Okay, so I think it's really important that Pedro regularly mentions, okay, stay on the text. Let's make sure we're not drifting too far, because the idea is to discuss it and what its meaning is and implications for other work.
Yeah, and also when we stick to the text, we stick to the complete text. And this is one of the other things that I think has really been important for what we've been doing, because in my work, like, for example, I'll take McGregor, Douglas McGregor, the episode we did on Theory X and Theory Y. If you were to look around in the internet or whatever, the definitions of Theory X and Theory Y are probably the only things you're going to find out. But then when you actually get into the entire book, you learn so much more about what else McGregor was actually talking about, and some of it has some tremendous applicability. But by reducing it down to just a little piece, there's so much about these classic works that we miss. And I think the same applies for a whole range of the classic works. And that for me is, you know, it's an important, like, if we're going to be critical about the classics, well, let's be fair about them. Let's examine them in their total. What were they trying to say and why? And then we can critique, we can, you know, do anything we want with it.
Yeah, and we're not, when we're engaging with classics, there's our own way, I think, in how we do it, that we have colleagues like Todd Bridgman and Stephen Cummings who are doing hardcore historical revisionism and are going into documentary evidence to really find out what happened with Hawthorne studies and so on and so forth. That's not quite what we're into. I feel we're more interested in, yes, reading the original text, less so in the circumstances in which it was composed, but mainly how does this text or these ideas inform the way we think about management today, and what can we learn or take away from that, and both in terms of something new but also revising what we thought we knew. Such was the case with literally episode one, when we read Principles of Scientific Management, which just turned for me so much of my undergraduate and postgraduate management education upside down, because of just the assumptions that I thought the whole thing was built on were not the correct assumptions. But it's interesting what you said, Tom, about that we try to stick to the whole text when we do with text, because, well, we didn't do that in the beginning for a variety of reasons. And I think it's worth a little bit talking about that. There are certain limitations that come into play when trying to record a discussion about a large book, and a sort of a famous, not disaster, but something to that effect that comes to my mind is when we came across our first large text, which was the Function of the Executive by Chester Barnard.
Oh yes, that's a lot. That was a lot of work.
Yeah, that ended up being a bit of a mess. So we ended up doing two episodes of like four parts each or something like that, just horribly confusing.
Yes. It was, I would call it a learning opportunity, Demetrius, not a disaster exactly. We learned.
Yeah, well, hopefully, but the point is that, yeah, while we do want to record discussions and have fruitful conversations about these ideas, I mean, I don't personally mind a four-hour podcast, but I think I'm by myself there amongst our team. And yeah, there's limitations on what we can do. There's limitations on what we can actually physically record and publish as a podcast.
Right, and because we don't script what we do, sometimes we discover that in the middle of podcasting, that it's going in a direction that we hadn't quite planned. Not necessarily a bad thing, but that's one of the side effects, I'm not saying it's a downside, of not scripting it, is that we'll discover that in the course of the podcast.
I think that that brings us to something that we ought to talk about, which is, you know, how do we actually record it? Because there are perceptions, that very persistent ones, that this is in some way controlled, scripted, or what have you. The only thing we literally do is we say, all right, we're going to set up a 2-hour time block where we're going to record, and we're just going to talk. And now there's a little bit more to it than that, of course, but that's the essence of it. It's entirely unscripted.
Yeah, if this were scripted, I'd need to have a long talk with whoever's writing my part, because whenever I listen to it in post-production.
Yeah, because he needs some work. Yeah, so the farthest we go is sometimes about 30 seconds before we hit the record button, and we'll talk about the program in such a minute, is that we'll say, okay, let's start out this way and cover some of these ideas and then go. And then we just kind of move along and give some each other suggestions in the chat. We use the chat window quite a bit as we're moving forward. And that is really about as far as it goes. And then we try to, for me, when we started doing the podcast, I was always a little worried I'd have enough to contribute. And I spent a lot of time studying and I was nervous. And I thought, oh, I won't be able to have anything useful for Dimitri and Pedro to refer to. And then I noticed this, and we'll talk about this more a little bit later, but I noticed that I just had to work on my part and work on the things that I found interesting. And then we could reflect off of each other. And it's that actual interaction, the rebounding from each other that is really useful. So I still get a little bit of performance anxiety, but not as much as I used to.
Just I think it's important to say that while it is unscripted, there is some structure. There is a little bit of a method in the madness. In the first, I mean, the tangible one is that we try to organize our ideas and our conversation in ways that in the first part we try to drill on the text, and the second part is more like broader thinking connections and applications, so to speak, right? But I think that beyond this more tangible organizational format, there is something that we all share that's almost tacit. Most of us have postgraduate degrees, right? And we have been socialized in this academic way of thinking from seminars, from discussions. So we bring that, right? I think if you were to do a random book club with people with different types of trains from different types of occupations, the way they would approach it would be different. I think we have this shared common ground on how to read a text, how to criticize it, how to draw distinctions, how to draw connections. And that kind of naturally comes together, right? Because we are different enough, but complementary, in which we know what is the common goal that we have, but we know that we have different perspectives on that, so we can organize our conversation around that.
And beyond that, we also respect each other. And well, when we started this back in 5 years ago, it was myself and Pedro. We knew each other for a few years before this, and we met Ralph about a year before the podcast started, and Pedro knew Miranda, but I didn't. So we weren't like super familiar with each other in any way, but we had enough respect for one another to have a conversation that didn't involve constantly people interrupting each other or shouting over each other or anything like that. And then when Tom came along with Joe at the time, only Ralph knew them. In fact, up to this day, with the current podcast team, there isn't anyone who has met everyone. And there's a few people who don't know others. And still, that doesn't really impact the way we talk because of this general climate of respect and consideration for other people's ideas and what they have to say. I think that's super important and something that actually is missing in some of the other settings where people do shout over one another or shut other ideas down for no reason.
We are basically a dialogical Wikipedia.
Well, that's a great way to put it, dialogical Wikipedia. Tom, you want to say?
Yeah, I was going to say that, but I tell you, you know, since I did come in after the podcast had been established, I will say that it really was a joy to be able to join. Precisely because of those reasons, because of the respect that and the form of the conversation. And it was also just easy because there was enough structure that, we were able to produce something that was would be useful to our listeners. But also it allowed each of us to sort of develop our own individual way of contributing to the conversation. And that's definitely carried forward as we continue to add members, as we continue to add new perspectives. And also, I came in at the time when we had the episodes tied with the Journal of Management Studies, which where we had so many guest speakers, and that was a very terrific way of engaging with the classics in that fashion.
Right. So let me give an overview of the mechanics of how we do the podcast, and then Tom and Dimitris can assist me. And essentially, what we do, we use different formats, and I don't need to mention specific programs or applications, but we do one overarching application where we can all talk together, sometimes see each other, sometimes not see each other. We actually prefer, and we all of us have said this, we prefer being able to see each other. We did it for quite a bit of time without being able to see each other, and that seems to add something to the podcast, to be able to see each other's facial expressions and finger gestures and those kind of, very polite, but, about who wants to come and when. And then at the same time, for that joint recording, we have backups. We have individual backups because every now and then we'll have internet problems. And so each of us has an application on our device that we're using, which is sometimes an iPhone at a train station. We've had people doing that before, which was a lot of fun, actually, because you could hear the track announcements in the background. And that's a good backup because every now and then some part of the audio will be corrupted or not useful. And then we have that's sort of a guarantee individual local audio. And then one other aspect I think is important about the recording is that we all have many electronic devices and we use them constantly. And we have learned you have to shut those things off, and not because someone's going to be doing their email during the podcast. We never have that issue. But because you'll get a call, or your mom will maybe texting you, or you'll something like that, which will make sound. So we've had to work on that. And then we essentially upload our individual audio. There's a place where the group audio goes, and then the post production occurs that both Dimitris and Tom are experts on.
Why are you not disclosing any of the names of any of the stuff, Ralph?
Just because when Tom sent the note, he said he suggested maybe that he didn't want to do it, but he'd be my guest. I was just following Tom's lead.
Yeah, no, let's share it in case someone wants to try it out.
We can mention it. We started with Skype, and that worked pretty well, but we had time synchronization issues, and the audio got kind of scruffy, and it was a lot of work for Dimitris. So then we switched over to Zencastr. And that was very reliable.
Just if I can interject. So the thing with Skype back in the day was, and possibly still is, that when we would record, what would get captured was the combined conversation. So as we're talking now, it's that was there. And that was a problem because of background noise and squeaky chairs.
Right, so
you
couldn't separate it, right? That was the problem.
Yeah, you can't separate it, which made it very difficult to clean it.
That's why we had to go to Zencastr.
Yeah, so then we started recording on our own computers using what we're still generally using, a software called Audacity. It's free, you can download it, no problem, works great. We use it both for recording and for editing. Then technology evolved so much that Zencastr, a voice over IP web-based solution came along, which allowed us to do voice-only conversations, but it would also record separate tracks per each speaker. So that allowed us to then have two backups, the one from Zencastr and the one that we would have on our machine, which wasn't foolproof either because they would occasionally crash or get corrupted for some reason. And we did lose a couple of episodes over the lifetime of the podcast due to that. A notable one was for, I think, episode 20, where we had retired Admiral Tom Mercer come in. And actually, on that episode, there was another guest, but his audio was corrupted, so we couldn't use it, and we had to cut him out. So that's that didn't make it to the podcast eventually. So we did that for up until pretty much recently, when we're now experimenting with Zoom. As Ralph mentioned, we do like seeing one another and their hand gestures. So now we're transitioning to Zoom from Zencastr. It's also a bit more stable. But Zencastr has free subscription packages that people can use if they're interested in. And as I mentioned, Audacity is free as well. And if you don't, you know, if you're interested in podcasting, but you don't necessarily need such a complex setup as we have, where we're spread out all over the world and we're having to record individual tracks and then glue them together back together into an episode, then it's pretty straightforward to get started just with those software solutions. And yeah, then we pop it all up onto Google Drive. And that's where it's backed up. And then it's uploaded onto our RSS feed and onto our website separately, so that there's a bit more redundancy in the system.
Right. One thing I would add, Dimitris, is that we are focused quite a bit on quality input. And that audio input. So Dimitris was very focused at the beginning, saying, you got to have good mics. You can't be doing this with just your earphone mics or the mic on your computer, because the quality is not good enough. He had to have something that was good quality to start with before he edited it. And I'll say that I sometimes listen to podcasters doing interesting work, but they really haven't paid enough attention to audio quality, and it's distracting as heck because there's all this, the audio is muffled or it's not clear. And what we have sometimes gone to when we had guests, we would send them a mic and say, this is what we would like you to use if you're just going to use your headsets. And we'd always ask them, what kind of mic are you going to use? Because that audio quality is, I think, a distinguishing feature of better podcasts.
Whatever happened to that mic?
I'm not sure, because Joe sent me back the one I loaned him. And so I still have that one, but yeah, we have to figure it. But if you need to send it, I can send one of mine.
It used to live in Warwick Business School, but then I left, and I have no idea. It might still just sit there on a shelf somewhere.
Yike. Somebody should be podcasting with that.
All right.
Now, let me jump on and talk about the posting and the, you know, the post-production, because I've assumed some of the post-production duties from Dimitris. I use Audition. Simply because I find it a lot more efficient than Audacity. The only challenge is that it is kind of costly. But I have Adobe Creative Cloud for other purposes, so it was easy for me to do. And so then, when it comes to actually stitching the episode together, it involves largely trying to get all of the tracks cleaned and getting them aligned. And yes, we do it all ourselves. I mean, we have considered, outsourcing it at some point, but we found that, we can do this fairly efficiently ourselves. We also can control getting them uploaded to RSS, which we use Spreaker as our hosting station, and it's basically serves our purpose. And it also, I have a lot of experience with WordPress. We run our site on WordPress. I basically, when I get into the post-production and I'm done with doing the audio, I set up a whole release kit that we can send out so that we can be prepared to issue social media notices and all that stuff. It's all done organically among us. There's no outside involvement.
One other comment, Tom, was that we noted that when we did try to outsource or delegate other audio tasks. The people we did it who didn't charge a lot or who were interested in the podcast, their standards weren't high enough, and we found out they weren't as reliable as we can be and couldn't focus on the details, which he felt was very important to making sure we had a quality audio in the podcast. And I do want to say, Tom, you do a wonderful job of getting everything up on WordPress and having the introductions and the teasers for the episodes and the short notes that I think has really made the podcast sparkle recently, because none of us had the skill level or time available to do what you do so well. So I think that's really helped the podcast.
Yeah, no, Tom's doing great. And in fact, I'm convinced that there's more people behind this name than he's leading us to believe, because the...
Yeah, there's actually more than one of them. He has a twin, and I think it's another guy. Looks just like him, but because it seems...
I'm more suspecting that he's outsourcing some of this to his many children.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought he just cloned himself. That's what maybe. I was thinking. And one other comment I want to make is if you do what we do, or this kind of podcasting, and you get some level of success, you're going to get these unsolicited offers of people to do your audio for you. You do this for you, do that for you, do transcripts. Oh, you should do the transcripts. And
yes,
this is
lots of guest offers.
Yeah, so we get a lot of that stuff, and we turn it all
nothing
down
to do with your podcast. Yeah,
correct. And then people say, "Oh, I want to do a post on your blog and stuff." No, it's because these people have other agendas. And it's not ours. And so we pretty much universally say no to all that stuff. Or they'll say, "Oh, yeah, you should do this and you should do that." And our standard response in the first year or two, Demetrius, and probably recently still, is, "Hey, this is the this is a labor of love. This is the best we have with the time we have available. And we're happy with it. So we're not going to spend any more money on transcriptions and all this other stuff." Because you say, "Oh, you used to have a transcription. Oh, by the way, I know a service. Oh, yeah, thanks a lot."
I was going to say that I think that those kind of requests are even okay. I think that sometimes what is a bit sad is that, because we have been doing it for a while and the show has a good number of listeners, there is people that, of course, wants to use it for their own gains. And it goes against our core principle. That is something that we do for the collective. We don't even do it for ourselves. We don't even publicize our own research or whatever, right? We, of course, cite that and discuss that, but it's very much not our principle. And just to say that, and clearly, that this is very much a labor of love, and we are all volunteers and showcases our passion for this, for pushing and creating space for these ideas. And we are very thankful for all the work that first Demetrius and Tom later did on kind of, spearheading a lot of the gigantic tasks that involve in making this happen, right? Because, of course, it's a small little organization itself.
Yeah,
shouldn't
short sell yourself either, Pedro, because I'm fully convinced that if Pedro wasn't running around and telling everyone about the show in the early days, we wouldn't have achieved so much coverage so quickly. The show has been listened to by more than 1,000 people, very early in its life. I don't remember when, but way quicker than we ever anticipated. And I think that's a lot of it is down to just Pedro going and talking to everyone.
I still think you were standing at shopping malls in Brasilia and handing out cards for the podcast because it's amazing the worldwide, I'm not bragging, but I am always a little surprised by people in different countries who will get notes periodically, which we always love. So you want to send us feedback, that's helpful.
But that's the power of the collective, right? And I think that's the strength of organizations, that we ourselves are one, that we bring different things to the table. And I have a natural leaning and capacity to be, connected and share. And that's just what I am. So I think we all bring our different competences and together complement also in the doing and the mechanics, not just in the thinking, right?
Also about believing in the idea that we can all get behind and being passionate about it, I think.
Yeah, and not only, we don't just do this one podcast, but there's also a whole network associated with this, the Talking About Organizations Network. And Pedro, you've got one separate podcast on the network. I've got a separate podcast on the network. How did the idea of the network come about?
That was Demetrius.
Yeah, that was the evil genius of Demetrius. He always comes up with these really clever, creative ideas. And I think, wow, that is so amazing. That's why I refer to him as the evil genius of the podcast. Pedro is the more angel of the podcast, try to keep us on task and focus.
the idea for that arose really of me being bored of all of you, and well, no, obviously not.
That's a good way to state it. I just want to do something different.
I want my own project. No, nothing like that. But at one point, I felt that we've accumulated enough experience with producing our episodes, and I had more kind of time on my hands as Tom began taking the post-production over. So I thought, why not?
Why not expand the idea, right? Yeah, share.
Why not share it? Yeah, share it. Because we do get occasionally people inquiring about, well, you know, how hard is it to do this? And can we, you know, can I do it? And we wouldn't normally have anything to offer other than words of encouragement. And so the network arose as a potential solution to that on the one hand. And on the other hand, we, and this is still kind of in the future and the potentiality that we're working on, is, well, our podcast is pretty big, and it's used widely for education and business schools. I think something like 38 universities are using it on their curricula that we know of. But it's also very specific. Not everyone is going to want to listen to us talk about ideas in an unstructured way for hours on end. So Tom's podcast came along as a way to offer kind of much shorter, more structured, more kind of subject specific reflections. And Pedro's podcast that he did with Emily on was to focus on methodology. And we now have the podcast from the OMT division at the Academy of Management, which is aimed to focus more on the actual community of people. So where we're going with this in the near or medium to long future is to create an ecosystem and like a one-stop shop for management and organization studies interests that people could go to, and they could pick out like, all right, so now I want to learn about how to do this method, or I want to listen to this person talk about their work and life a little bit, or I want to learn what's up with scientific management through the Talking About Organizations podcast. And kind of having this dual purpose of both supporting our colleagues and peers who are interested in, but perhaps a bit intimidated in this whole podcast thing, and also creating a broader community of such resources that people can draw on. And mind you, it's all free. We do not have any paywalls, and none of our network podcasts have any paywalls, and they never will, because that's not why we're doing this. Petra said it's a labor of love. Well, maybe not quite that, but it's certainly a type of service that we do to the community, and that we offer it as a means of improving our community and providing these resources to people who might not have access to other resources, or those who just might want an alternative perspective on what they get, you know, as is.
If you're interested in doing something like this, or you have some ideas that don't exactly overlap with what we're currently doing, and maybe even if they do, but you're gonna do it differently, we're willing to consider that. You're just gonna send a note to the email or contact address on the website, and we'll do what we can. Yeah, we'll try to help.
So if we were to talk about let's call this the joy of podcasting, what are some of the great takeaways and some of the things that we want to think about in the future?
Well, I can tell you from my perspective that I really enjoy the interaction in the podcast. And I regularly tell people that it's meant to be like some kind of pub or a seminar or academic conversation amongst colleagues, and that you can drop in and listen if you wish. And we've actually attracted new show members as a result, because they really are attracted by that format. And I always enjoy comparing my perspectives with others and the point of view of learning that what other people saw in the text or what they thought was particularly outstanding or worth noting. And sometimes it's a good or bad thing. And I learn, believe it or not, from every podcast. So it's not just coming in with my ideas. I really look forward to that opportunity to learn what the other members of the team have to say or what they knew that was interesting. And that's one of the things I enjoy the most about it.
For me, a lot of it has to do with that our conversations are emergent and genuine. And these kinds of things are pretty difficult to come by these days, even within the university setting, where you do have colleagues with similar interests and research areas or whatnot. You wouldn't normally be able to sit down for a couple of hours and just talk to them about the work that has been published over 100 years ago and, you know, is not really making headlines now. But we can hear, and there's something deeply satisfying with having these conversations. It's enriching, it's energizing, and exhausting both at the same time. But it's just coming out of every episode, I just feel really, really great having done that, even if preparation was highly inconvenient and I had to read the book while doing half a dozen other things, or even just run through an article and feel terribly unprepared. But then once we log in and once we see or hear each other and we get into this conversation, it's just fantastic. And obviously it's not something that is unique to the podcast. Conversations can happen anywhere and anyone can take part in them. And I just think that it's such a hugely important aspect of what we do, that if we didn't have this environment that we've built where we can have these discussions and have respect for each other and listen and not shout over one another, there wouldn't be this podcast. Like, it's just plain and simple. It would not go past two episodes, you know.
So building on what Dimitris just said, I think there is something about stretching the mind, right? And even though many of us are academics, so we spend all the time debating and writing and engaging with ideas already, but that usually has a specific purpose, right? You're preparing something specific about your own research, you're trying to write a paper or reviewing a paper or preparing a presentation for a conference or going to a conference and debate someone else's paper. So it's always very targeted. It not necessarily one goes to the fundamental ideas, which we do here, and it's not necessarily freely playful, right? It's always with a specific goal, and we have this broader, more underlying opportunity to just really think aloud and think together, which I think that, you know, enhances and empowers and stretches our imagination, not just in terms of the content, but the capacity to think about these things in an oral way. So, right, academia is very much a written, a text word, and the podcast is an opportunity to develop our orality. And we know that the different medium we use enhances and impacts and augments different ways of thinking and different areas of the mind. So being able to think of these things orally and talking about them develop specific skills. And it's funny because I started teaching here at my institution recently, and it was almost like a realization, because I have not done a lot of teaching before, but I started talking, I had just like this feeling. I realized that I have been practicing all this time, right? Because I have been orally thinking and sharing and really and explaining concepts related to OT through all this time. And also, I think that orality in a world of texts, you know, academia is almost medieval, so to speak, with this. And of course, it's important when we do all that as well, but it creates an opportunity to be more direct, right? To put ideas out there in a more immediate way, with a broader reach, in a different kind of, well, perhaps less perfect and finished, but certainly more engaging and organic and lifelike, so to speak, right?
Absolutely. And in addition, the ability to engage worldwide, I mean, you know, to get out of your comfort zone and to be able to talk with people who you might not have otherwise been talking to, talking about subjects, talking about classic texts that are outside of your field, that you recognize upon having these conversations, you realize, you know, there's a lot more connective tissue between the classics and more contemporary classics or the movies. There's so much there that you can have a much broader, more enriching conversation when you're teaching. And that's certainly one of the things that I enjoy.
There's also paradoxical liberation from kind of professional reputational responsibility that comes with doing this, because podcast is not a published piece of work, or it's not a statement that we make in a setting amongst colleagues that's kind of is meant to be taken as our professional stance on something. And even though we're broadcasting to more than 18,000 people with every episode, it's oddly liberating that we do not have this pressure to say things that are fully accurate, that we think through what we say. And we're not always right. We do not profess to have the best, most up-to-date knowledge, or things, statements that we make are not most thought through, but that's why it's a podcast and not a video lecture or anything like that. And that's great. I really enjoy that. And to echo Pedro, I do also feel that it has made me a more agile and interesting teacher in the classroom to have this practice to do that, and to not have this pressure to always be serious and super accurate and authority on some domain of knowledge, which, you know, I am in my area, but that's not what we're doing here, and that's super helpful. I actually wanted to ask Tom about his, because, you know, Taup is a conversational podcast, so the benefits of podcasting are pretty clear, but you're talking to the microphone by yourself.
Well, for me, this is like my bucket list of all of the things that I wish I had the opportunity to reflect on, but haven't, or had not gotten to it. And that was the motivation behind the Reflections on Management podcast. And I just found that every single time, for example, when we have a Talking About Organizations episode recording, I come away with something like, yeah, I've seen this in real life. So let me connect the two, and that was sort of the impetus, or some other things from, you know, other life experiences. It's a different thing now. It's a lot less organic. I script mine a little bit more in order to try to keep it within a 15 to 20 minute product. But ultimately, I try to think about something that that has some practical relevance, where perhaps what I learned from the main podcast can contribute.
I think if we were to summarize, podcast, especially ones, the one that we make, the one that you're listening to, is a tremendous amount of work for basically no pay, but it's just, we get so much out of it, both intellectually, both interpersonally. We're incredibly grateful to have the opportunity to contribute to the development of our community in such an unorthodox way, and arguably a very impactful way as well. So I think we do derive joy from podcasting, and we would absolutely urge anyone to try to pursue this if you're at all interested or curious about it.
Yes, and to go back to where we started, I think that just shows that we together just think that academia and scholarship and specific world of organizational theory or studies or analysis, whatever you call that, right? This field, there is a space for putting out there fundamental ideas that are relevant, right? Because a lot of these debates on management tend to be about specific, they just don't have much of a voice. And all this to say two things. One, as Dimitri said, it's a lot of work, but at the end of the day, it's the kind of scholars or thinkers or people we want to be, which is to think and try to push not only our own little things or the direct projects that are measured as important, but what we believe is important ultimately to scholarship, which is to be shared, to be listened, to be used, and to be, you know, part of the world.
Yeah, pursuing our curiosity. You know, we got into academia generally because we were curious about things. But that academia has a good way of beating that out of people over time. And, well, I guess this is one of the ways to not let it, to keep the curiosity and to keep the certain drive and certain innocence that comes with seeking new knowledge or trying our intellect in these different settings with each other.
And that concludes the episode for today. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and found it valuable. If so, please consider subscribing through your favorite podcast service and you won't miss an episode. We also welcome your feedback, so if you liked or didn't like something, or have a correction or suggestion for us, please get in touch via Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, or our website, www.talkingaboutorganizations.com. Finally, we would like to thank some wonderful people for supporting the show. Sarah Audner, Leon Prieto, Hadi Shaheen, Marshall Reiner, Alice Barbosa, Thomas Roulet, Heiko Schmidt, Barton Friedland, Guldem Kara Mustafa, Roberta Bernardi, Marina Timmer, Bernard Hogan, Eddie Hunsinger, Fiona Knight, Peaks Craft, Timothy Paul, Willy Leidon-Wirte, Gabriel Van Bunnen, and Clara Lux. It's easy to support the show, and all you have to do is go to our website, where a donations button will greet you. Again, thank you for listening, and we hope to see you when we present another classic reading on organization theory or management science here on Talking About Organizations.